There is a groundswell of hatred running against our little country. It's been cunningly orchestrated by a small, vicious group of our enemies. They are brainwashing an entire generation of young people around the world to regard us as monsters who must be destroyed at all costs. Very soon these young people will be in positions of authority and command. They are the decision-makers of tomorrow. One day we could see an American naval task force blockading our coast. We could face a military invasion of, say, Indian troops backed by Australia and Canada and all the members of the Commonwealth. Oh, Papa, that's far-fetched, isn't it? Still remote, Schaza agreed. But you met influential members of the British Labour government while we were in London. You spoke to members of the American Democratic Party. Teddy Kennedy, for one. Do you remember what he told you?
Yes, I remember, said Isabella, and the memory subdued her.
We must make absolutely certain that no nation, not even one of the superpowers, can ever, with impunity, consider armed intervention in our internal affairs.
We already have the bomb, she pointed out.
Nuclear weapons are expensive, difficult to deliver, and impossible to limit or control in their effects. There are other effective deterrents.
Elsa Pignatelli is going to provide an alternative. Why should she help us?
Signora Pignatelli is a sympathizer. She's a member of the Italian South Africa Society. She knows and understands Africa. She is a huntress and she has other ties with this continent. Her father was on General De Bono's staff when he invaded Abyssinia in 1935. Her husband fought in the Western Desert under Rommel and was captured at Benghazi. He spent 3 years as a POW in South Africa and developed an affection for the country that lasted his lifetime. He transmitted those feelings to her. She visits Africa regularly, either to hunt or do business. She understands the problems we face and rejects, as we do, the simplistic solutions which the rest of the world would try to force upon us. This meeting was arranged at her suggestion. Isabella wanted to ask questions, but she knew it was wiser to let him come to it in his own time. She sat silently, staring at the rutted track, barely noticing the herd of impala antelope that crossed ahead of the vehicle in a series of lithe bounds. They were lovely but insubstantial as blown smoke through the forest. Only 4 people know about this meeting, Bella. Signora Pignatelli has not trusted her own staff. Apart from Gary and I, only the Prime Minister is aware of the subject of our meeting. Isabella suppressed that sickening sense of treachery that lay at the pit of her stomach. She wanted to warn him not to tell. Then she thought of Nicky, and she sat quietly. 5 years ago, NATO had contracted with 2 chemical companies in Western Europe to develop a nerve gas that could be used under battlefield conditions. Last autumn, the contracts were cancelled, mostly due to pressure from the socialist governments of Scandinavia and Holland. However, much work had already been done on the development of these weapons, and one company had produced and tested a gas that met all the original criteria.
That company was Pignatelli Chemicals? Isabella asked.
When Schaza nodded, she went on,
What were the criteria that NATO laid down?
Oh, the weapon has to be safe to store and transport. Pignatelli developed 2 separate substances, each on its own absolutely inert and harmless. They can be transported in bulk tankers by road or by rail without any risk whatsoever. But when they combine, they form a heavier-than-air gas which is approximately 11 times more toxic than the cyanide gas used in American execution chambers. Schaza pulled off the track and parked the truck on the verge beneath the outspread branches of a flowering Kigelia tree, that lovely sausage tree with its gigantic pods the size and shape of polonies. He lifted Sean's double-barreled .577 Gibbs rifle off the rack behind the driver's seat and loaded it with 2 fat brass cartridges from the bandolier. "Let's go down to the hippo pool," he suggested. And Isabella followed him down the footpath to the deep green pool of the river. The rifle was insurance, for the hippo has killed more human beings in Africa than all the snakes and lions and buffalo combined. Yet they did not look dangerous as they wallowed under the bank, only their backs exposed like great black river boulders. Then the bull opened his jaws in a pink and cavernous gape and showed the ivory tusks that could scythe the papyrus reeds or guillotine a full-grown oxen into separate pieces. He turned his piggy eyes upon them and regarded them with a bloodshot malevolence. They sat side by side on a dead log, and Shaza propped the rifle close at hand. After a moment, the bull hippo closed his jaws and sank back below the surface, so that only his eyes and the tip of his small round ears were exposed. Shaza stared back at him as balefully.
11 times more toxic than cyanide gas, he repeated. It's terrifying stuff.
Then why, Pater? It is heinous. Why do it?
He shrugged.
To protect ourselves from hatred.
He picked up a pebble from between his feet and lobbed it at the hippo. The pebble splashed 20 feet short, but the bull submerged completely. Shaza went on speaking.
The gas is codenamed Syndex 25, and it has other desirable properties apart from its ability to deal swift and silent death.
How heartening, Isabella murmured. Oh, what are they?
It is odorless, there is no warning. Death comes unannounced. However, it can be given a signature. Any signature one chooses. The smell of ripe apples, or jasmine, or even Chanel No. 5, if you so wish.
That is macabre, Pater, not your usual style.
He did not respond to the rebuke. It is also highly unstable. Decay time is a mere 3 hours after mixing. Thereafter it is absolutely harmless. This is extremely advantageous. You can gas an opposing army and then move your own troops in to occupy the area 3 hours later.
Charming, Isabella whispered.
I have no doubt that the political possibilities have not entirely escaped the Prime Minister.
Say if 1 million blacks went on the rampage?
Shaza sighed.
I know, it doesn't bear thinking of.
But you have thought of it, haven't you, Pater?
He was silent, acquiescing.
You say that NATO cancelled the contracts? Only Pignatelli Chemicals are manufacturing the Syndex 25?
No. They manufactured and tested the gas. It was the 25th prototype, hence the numerical designation. But when the NATO contract was cancelled, they discontinued production and allowed the original stocks to degenerate.
Isabella glanced sideways at him.
Degenerate?
Well, as I said before, it is a highly unstable product. It has a very short storage life, 6 months. New stocks have to be constantly manufactured to replace those that deteriorate.
Lucrative for Capricorn Chemicals,
Isabella pointed out. But Shaza ignored the remark.
Signor Pignatelli will be able to supply us with blueprints for the plant. It is a complicated manufacturing procedure with very delicate manufacturing tolerances.
When will you begin to manufacture? Isabella asked,
and Shaza chuckled.
Hold your horses, young lady. It isn't even certain that Signora Pignatelli can be persuaded to sell us the blueprints and the formula. That is what we're going to chat about now.
He glanced at his wristwatch.
Almost lunchtime, and we're still half an hour from camp.
Sean called up on the camp radio on the unmanned airfield frequency when he was still 40 minutes out. So they were waiting on the airstrip when the Beechcraft slanted in towards the field that evening. Shading his eyes against the low-lying sun, Shaza made out the head of Sean's passenger through the windscreen as she sat in the right-hand seat. He felt an electric tickle down the back of his neck that was more than simple curiosity. It was extraordinary that he and Elsa Pignatelli had never met, for they came from the same world, that exclusive world of wealth and rank and privilege, that knew no national boundaries. They had literally dozens of mutual friends and acquaintances, and he was aware that on several occasions over the years they had been within a few minutes or kilometres of meeting each other. Shaza had been on friendly terms with her husband. The two men had skied in the same party one afternoon at Closter's and had run the notorious Wang together, that terrible ice wall that hangs above the village. At the time, Bruno Pignatelli had apologised for his wife's absence, but explained that she had flown to Rome that weekend to visit her elderly mother. She and Shaza must have passed each other at Zurich Airport, travelling in different directions. On another occasion, during Shaza's tenure at the embassy in London, they were invited separately to a dinner at the Swiss embassy. He learned afterwards that they would have been table companions, but Elsa Pignatelli had been obliged to cancel, for family reasons, only days before the engagement. Since then, Shaza had heard Elsa Pignatelli's name mentioned and discussed in detail at many a society dinner or weekend house party, often spitefully and vindictively, but often again with admiration and open envy. He had seen her photograph in the glossy women's fashion magazines, to which Santon and Isabella subscribed religiously. Courtney Industries had dealt with Pignatelli interests for 20 years, to the benefit and satisfaction of both parties. So in the weeks since this meeting had been arranged, Chazza had studied all the considerable information about her contained in the file that Special Services had provided. Sean taxied the Beechcraft to the hard stand of compacted red clay and switched off the engines. And Elsa Pignatelli stepped out onto the wing, then jumped down to earth. She moved with the supple grace of a young gymnast, and yet she was tall and long-limbed. Chazza knew she had modelled for Yves Saint Laurent before she married Bruno Pignatelli. Although he felt that he knew her, Chazza was unprepared for his own reaction to her physical presence. The electric tickle spread from his neck to the back of his arms, and he felt the hair there come erect as she looked around. Her dark gaze swept over Gary and Isabella and the servants, and fastened directly on him. Her hair was very dark, with an almost bluish gloss in the late afternoon sunlight. It was drawn back severely and secured behind her head in a neat, tight coil. This emphasized her fine bone structure, the high, slightly domed forehead and vaulted cheekbones, and yet her features were full and feminine. Her lips looked soft, and her mouth was wide.
"Chazza Courtney," she said his name as she came forward, with a free hip-swinging model's gait. She smiled, and he saw that her jawline was clean. He knew that next year in July she would celebrate her 43rd year. However, her skin was flawless, and lovingly cared for under light natural-toned makeup.
"Signora Pignatelli,"
he took her hand. It was cool and firm, with long, narrow bones. Her grip was swift but strong, the kind of hands that could hold a racket handle, or the reins of a thoroughbred. He regretted that the contact had been so fleeting, but her eyes were compensation. They were starred with rays of brown and gold that radiated from the central pupil. They were bright, intelligent eyes, and the lashes were long and black and curled.
"It is my regret that we have not met sooner," Chazza said in awkward Italian, and she smiled and answered in faultless English, tinged with only an intriguing hint of an accent.
"Oh, but we have."
Her teeth were startlingly white, but one incisor was just crooked enough to suggest that they were her own and not some orthodontist's artifice.
"Where?"
Sean was surprised.
"Windsor Park, the Guards Polo Club."
She was amused by his confusion.
"You are playing number 2 for the Duke of Edinburgh's invitation team."
"Oh, my goodness, that was 10 years ago."
11,
she said.
"We were never introduced, but we met for approximately 3 seconds at the buffet after the match. You offered me a smoked salmon sandwich."
"You have a marvellous memory," he admitted defeat. "Did you accept the sandwich?"
"How ungallant of you not to remember," she teased, and then turned to the others. "You must be Garrick Courtney,"
and Chazza hastened to introduce first Gary and then Isabella. The servants were loading Signora Pignatelli's luggage into one of the trucks. It was heavy leather luggage with brass-bound corners, and there was plenty of it. Only people who flew in their own jets and were not subjected to the caprice of the commercial airline's check-in could afford that type and quantity of luggage. There were 4 long gun cases amongst it.
"You'll ride with me, Signora?"
Sean tossed back his hair and called to her, as he stepped up into the high driver's seat of his hunting vehicle. She ignored the suggestion and fell in naturally beside Chazza as he crossed to the second truck. Isabella started to follow them, but Gary caught her hand and steered her towards the seat in Sean's truck, which Elsa had refused.
"Come on, Bella, wise up," Gary murmured. "3's a crowd."
Isabella started. It hadn't occurred to her. Not Pater and the widow. Then she leant briefly against Gary's arm.
"I didn't realize that you included matchmaking amongst your many talents."